This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Laura Klunder grew up in Franklin, Wisconsin in the 1990s. She went on to college at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In many ways, her suburban childhood was like many of her peers. But in one fundamental way, her life was different from nearly everyone she knew.
Klunder was born in South Korea and was an international adoptee who came to this country at the height of an adoption boom from that country. Today, she lives in Seoul and is a leading activist in the effort to reduce or even end the practice of international adoptions. It's a complicated issue that defies easy black and white analysis.
Her story and that of the movement of which she's a part was featured in the New York Times Magazine earlier this month. We reached her via Skype from South Korea. Laura Klunder, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, not to start this by painting with too broad a brush, but let me just ask you a big question here. What is it that brings so many Korean adoptees back from the United States to Korea?
You know, everyone has their distinct reason, but the article in the New York Times points out that many of us are back looking for a sense of connection, and that could be a connection to multiple things. It could be our country, our culture of origin, South Korea. It could be our birth families. But for a lot of us, it's a connection to each other, to other adoptees, and to establish friendships and memories with each other.
Help us understand what brought so many Koreans to the United States in the first place. I mean, obviously, you were very little when you were adopted, but what were the pressures, especially in those times in the 80s, that led to so many children entering the international adoption system?
Well, Korean adoption started in the mid-1950s following the Korean War, and there was the Holtz discussed the way that there were all these war orphans that needed a place and that there wasn't a place for them here in Korea. As Korean adoption continued for over 60 years at this point in time, more and more the issue became about the societal pressures facing unwed mothers to send their children overseas and have a better life. That was the dominant narrative in the culture. Korean women often are given messages that they're selfish to keep their children. They're given messages that their child will be better off if they grow up in the United States, where they might have access to housing, education, resources that that a Korean mother cannot provide in Korea.
And it sounds so like there's both economic and societal exploitation, if you will, at work here.
Absolutely. There's a real stigma associated with unwed motherhood here in Korea. And also, women are confronted with questions about their marital status in job interviews. They may be discriminated against in the workplace if they're an unwed mother. So there's a reality of, can they raise their child economically if they are being denied access to employment?
It seems like it would be much easier to go after things like economic pressures and legal pressures than it would be to go after things like societal norms.
You know, we actually have to work on everything here. So in 2011, the special adoption law was passed by a coalition of people fighting for adoptee rights and unwed mothers' rights. KORUT, the Korean Unwed Mothers and Families Associations, Truth and Reconciliation for the Adoption Community of Korea, Adoptee Solidarity Korea, and the Public Interest Lawyers, we all work together to work on some of the policies in Korean culture that would keep children in Korea versus sending them overseas. But then we also, adoptees, unwed mothers, are working together to speak out, to come out of the closet and talk about being proud to be an unwed mother, being an adult adoptee, and being in solidarity with unwed mothers in Korea.
How readily do you see people in Korea as willing to listen to what you have to say?
You know, I'm an optimist, so more and more as more adoptees come back and we talk about our experiences, I feel like Korean people are curious about our experiences as adult adoptees, and they do want to learn what can they do to help unwed mothers here in Korea. There are a lot of assumptions, and so sometimes people just really have no idea that there's so many complicated issues around adoption. Most people assume that it's a very simple story, that there's not a place for our children here in Korea. And so sending them overseas for adoption means that they can have a better life. But because adoptees and unwed mothers are working together, we've been able to complicate that narrative and say unwed mothers need support from our government. They need support from society to help them raise their children here in Korea. And we can, if we work together, we can all be part of the solution.
Do you get the sense, is there any national shame associated with this? I mean, I think I read in the New York Times article that something like 200,000 Koreans were adopted internationally over the past 60 years. That is a lot of people.
Absolutely. The article cites that it's roughly the size of Des Moines, Iowa. And so more and more Korean people are saying that we want to keep our Korean children here in Korea. And if you look at the current events in Korea, there's a lot of media coverage of the low birth rate, a weak social welfare system that cannot support our aging society. And so there's actually a real necessity to keep Korean children in Korea.
Would you encourage that to take place through more, you know, in-country adoptions, if you will?
Well, I think it's complicated. For me, I feel like advocating for family preservation first is a priority. So helping women, helping unwed mothers keep their children if they want to by providing government assistance and addressing the social stigma that might coerce women to relinquish their children to adoption. If family preservation first is not an option, yes, prioritize domestic adoption over inter-country adoption. And work towards a stronger social welfare system at the same time.
How did you arrive at the decision to move to Korea? You grew up in the Milwaukee area, went to school at UW-Madison, and I think you were working in Minnesota before you moved to Seoul.
Absolutely. And even if I thought visiting Korea was something that I wanted to do, living in Korea was so beyond my imagination at that point in time. But when I... let's see here. I was living in Minnesota. I met a number of Korean adoptees, and some of them had actually lived in Korea, and it was really surprising for me at that time. A year later, I visited Korea for the first time, and the article says that I participated in something called The Gathering. There were about 800 Korean adoptees from all over the world there. When I was at that conference, I heard other adoptees talk about living in Korea and being part of Korean society, and it just opened up my mind to think, I can live in Korea, I can make friends in Korea, I can establish memories in Korea. This is something that I want for my life. It's something that I didn't have access to as a child, but as an adult, I do have that option, and it's worth it, even if it's going to be hard, and certainly there's loss associated with moving to Korea as an adult.
There's loss. There's also complications. I mean, it is a much different language. It is a much different life than you would have experienced in the Midwest.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing easy about living here. It's only that it's worth it because I was born in Korea and I'm a Korean American adoptee. So I'm not only Korean and I'm not only American. At the same time, Korean culture is part of who I am and it's worth it to me to explore it.
Are there parts of you that still feel like an American living in Korea?
Absolutely. When I get tired and lonely, I want to eat biscuits and gravy and tater tot hot dish, and I would like to watch my weird sitcoms like Arrested Development and just other shows about white people.
Do you see your work already having an impact? I mean, are there, if not success stories, certainly things that make this gratifying?
Yeah, I want to believe that it is having an effect. You know, our group organizations worked together to pass a special adoption law in 2011. We're consistently seeing media coverage about supporting unwed mothers and family preservation. But I also think in the intimate lives of adoptees and adoptive families that we're having new conversations that say, yes, I'm so grateful for this adoptive family. Also, I feel a sense of loss and isolation because of these other power dynamics where I feel different. As a family, can we work towards our differences and then be supportive? And I think that's happening more and more. I think adoptive families are wanting to support their adoptee, and that's not about denying difference. It's about the whole family transforming and adjusting to have conversations about race, loss, grieving, and how to be a brand new family that's never existed before.
Is that the message you would want people in the United States to appreciate about your story and the story of so many others who have gone back?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, there's a couple ways to read the story, and one could read it and feel sad that, oh, my adoptive family adopted me and now I'm back in Korea, they lost me. But I think there's a really optimistic and positive story that there are 200,000 adoptees out there, and some of us are choosing solidarity when we were isolated at various moments in our lives. And there's so much possibility that we can work together to not only make place for ourselves as individuals, but for a community of people who at times felt lost, felt abandoned, that in this moment in time, we can do something. And that can start with a conversation and listening.
I would imagine, you know, sometimes a tough message for a lot of well-meaning Americans to hear. I mean, the obvious normal narrative in this country probably is that, you know, people are presented with this image of small children living in orphanages or other situations in which it's difficult to imagine a bright future, and they see themselves in a situation to make a difference in a life. If not adoption, what would you want people in the United States who, you know, would have been considering that step, what would you want them to consider?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I've talked to a lot of people who say just what you said, I want to help. And I think one of the most effective ways to help is to support Korean unwed mothers. And the Korean Unwed Mothers and Families Association, KUMFA, who's mentioned in the article, is a group of unwed mothers in Korea who are fighting for their rights to raise their children. And so you can find them on Facebook. You can donate to them online. You can also just have conversations in your families around the dinner table at holidays about what are the issues that unwed mothers are experiencing around the world. And if women have the right to raise their children, and is there something that we can do to be more supportive than removing a child and not only saving one child by adopting them away from their family and country of origin, but helping so many children who are vulnerable because their families are denied access to economic resources and social support?
Do you talk to Korean adoptees in the United States who, for whatever reason, make the decision that they feel more comfortable staying in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. I have adoptees and adoptee friends all over the world, and some of us do choose to come back to Korea and live here. Some of us choose to visit Korea, and some of us choose to stay in our adoptive countries, and that's totally valid. What I would hope is that adoptees, wherever they are in the world, feel like they have the choice to be part of a broader adoptee community, even if not wanting to be part of their country of origin. But I do think that adoptees create space for each other every time we get together and tell our stories to each other. I think that's really powerful.
I wonder if at the heart of all of this is the message that the concept of home is not necessarily to be taken for granted.
I think that's true. And I think that in my personal experience, home has shifted over time, and it's not a geographic location only. Sometimes it's a moment, sometimes it's with friends. And I think that adoptees have the right to define home. And when I was growing up, I didn't have that right. Someone told me what home is, and that home was Franklin, Wisconsin. And I wanted to complicate that, and now I can. And I would hope that other adoptees feel empowered to define home for themselves, that it can be one place, it can be multiple places, and it can change to surround them wherever they are.
Do you think a day will come when you will want to come back here for a visit?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure it will be in summer when the lakes are beautiful and I can go hiking and walking.
You are not missing anything as far as the weather goes right now.
Oh, no, I'm happy to be here in Korea right now. But maybe around state fair time when there's a cream puff and corn that's in question, I will be back in Milwaukee.
Well, Laura Klunder, thank you so much for spending some time with us and helping walk us through this really complex issue.
Yeah, thank you so much for being curious about us and our work here in Korea.
Laura Klunder is a representative for Adoptee Solidarity Korea, who lives in Seoul. Klunder herself was a Korean adoptee. She grew up in Franklin and graduated from UW-Madison. Her story was featured recently in the New York Times Magazine. There is a link to the story from WUWM.com.
We'll take a quick break now and then meet a local 9-year-old whose video on trees is a finalist in a national competition. You are listening to Lake Effect from WUWM.